Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the Gene Pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
And we welcome you in here on a Monday following the Jaguars 17-3 victory in Indianapolis over the Colts. Cole Pepper here along with the general manager Gene Smith. Well, you start the second half off with a victory on the road in the division. And the Colts are winless, but hey, you get a road win in the division. That's a pretty good way to start the second half.
Sure is, Cole. And we knew going up to Indianapolis they'd be very inspired playing against us. They always play us well. It's always a great football game, and it was great to see our team, play 60 minutes worth of football. And the second half was certainly better than the first half for our offense. And, you know, there's some growth that occurred, and we still got a ways to go, but really liked the way the players laid it out on the line on Sunday.
And some of the big positives to come out of the ball game. The defense held the Colts to their lowest point total since Peyton Manning was a college quarterback. Back in 97 was the last time they had scored three or fewer. And again, sometimes in the NFL, you see the ratings and you say, all right, well, they should do that. But then you put it in some deeper context historically. Hold a team to 3 points, pretty darn good.
No question. In the NFL, everybody is somebody. And even though they hadn't won a game, we knew that they would certainly prepare well against us and play us hard. It's a divisional game. And, again, I thought the defense holding them to 212 total yards. They got 68 on that last drive. And then just the 3 points that they got up on the scoreboard, because they do have a good kicker when they are able to get within range. I just thought the overall effort and the ability to create turnovers – our seventh in the last three games has been outstanding by our defense.
Five sacks, two interceptions, two forced fumbles by the defense yesterday. And, of course, Maurice Jones-Drew, yet again, it's a given against the Colts that he's going to have a big game. Every time it seems like the Jaguars play the Colts, he puts up big numbers. 114 yards rushing, had a touchdown, three catches for 23 yards as well.
The one thing about Maurice and really Greg Jones is they do play like linebackers. Greg Jones was outstanding on the lead plays, and then Maurice finishing his runs. There were times where he was putting it on the defender. And I thought we set the tempo up front. I mean, it's the same offensive line for the third straight game. And I just thought when you talk about winning the game up front, we did it on both sides of the line of scrimmage yesterday.
And that's the first time all year that you've had three straight games with the same offensive line, and it looks like you might see more of that. We'll talk a little bit about some of the injuries, but some of the options are starting to dwindle as far as that's concerned. Some other positives I saw coming out of the game, Jarrett Dillard and Chaston West both making plays in the passing game.
Yeah, those are positives. Really, this past week, Blaine and the receiving group probably had their best practice as a whole since the preseason. So it was really good to see there was more precision in the practices. The ball was caught at a higher rate. I know it didn't look like that necessarily in the first half, but I thought, you know, they hung together, and then in the second half when Blaine was able to lead our offense on a 16-play, go-ahead scoring drive for that touchdown. Really thought that was a really good thing in terms of an execution of our offense working together.
Blaine only had one incompletion in the second half. He was 6 of 12 in the first half and finished 14 out of 21, so seven incompletions in the game. Six of them came before halftime.
That's accurate. Again, I go back to the offensive line play. You know, really with the exception of Robert Mathis winning off the edge one time. Franey, on the right side had one quarterback hit and no tackles in the game. So I thought, you know, our tackles, you know, confronted against two very good edge rushers. Freeney is a guy certainly going to go to the Hall of Fame one day. I thought we did a very good job of protecting the quarterback.
And last week you had tagged that as really the key matchup to watch, the Jaguars' offensive tackles against those defensive ends for the Colts, and the Jaguars won that battle and won the game. I thought the key play in the game maybe was the hands-to-the-face penalty on Tyler Brayton in the third quarter. Helped extend a drive that wound up being a 16-play, 86-yard drive to 9 minutes, 40 seconds off the clock, and Jarrett Dillard with that touchdown. And people say, well, it's a penalty. You got to take advantage of it. And after the really sluggish first half offensively, to come out and in an early drive in the second half, be able to take advantage of that and put points on the board is a pretty good sign.
No question. You know, the penalty, just like throughout any ball game, can work for you and can work against you. And there's always some calls in the game that were missed on both sides. I thought overall it was just a very combative game up front. And, you know, you try to win games any way that you can, and you try to make some breaks, certainly through your preparation, the effort you give on game day. And I thought that played itself out yesterday.
Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that did crop up with some issues. You mentioned the first half, both teams. But that was not, if you like offense, that first half was not much to watch. Teams combined for 9 punts, 2 interceptions, 2 field goals, and a missed field goal. From the Jaguars' standpoint, what was right in the second half that wasn't in the first?
Well, I think, you know, some checkdowns. You know, Blaine got the ball in you know, some hands that could do some things with it. And when I say that, we had Deji Karim one particular time ran across the field. You saw a tremendous burst in speed to pick up a first down. And I think anytime you can get it in his hands, Maurice Jones-Drew's hands, our tight end's hands on checkdowns, I think you're going to see, you know, our ability to take, let's say, a 4 or 5 or 6 yard pass and turn it into a 10, 12 yard play to enable us to sustain some drives by getting first downs.
So was it as much about doing something that there was a conversation that had been mentioned in the off in the bye week, try to put guys in position to succeed, you know, to play to the strength. And you talk about that play to Deji, get him out in the open field, let him use his shiftiness and his speed. You thought there was a better job of that in the second half then?
Well, it appeared that way to me. I also believe the way we were able to run the ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were imposing our will on their defensive front. And, again, I thought it was a total team effort. Even the special teams, I thought, did some very good things. It wasn't just the offense turning it on in the second half and some of the things we did in the defense overwhelming them. It was, you know, all three phases doing their part.
All right. We have a lot coming up here on Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. We'll talk more about yesterday's ball game, the Jaguars' victory over the Colts. Some roster moves were made, some injuries to update you on. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so on Twitter. Tweet it to me, at Cole Pepper. You can also go on the Jaguars Facebook page, facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars, and just enter your question in the thread that's already begun that mentions Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Also coming up, we'll announce the Scouts Eye Unsung Player. If you think you know who the unsung player was from yesterday's ball game, go ahead and get your vote in now. And the winner will get an autographed football autographed by the general manager and this week's Scouts Eye Unsung Player. Wednesday, November 30th, the AutoSpot Tire Pros at 9718 Touchton Road invite you to join them for Cookies with the Jaguars Rookies from noon till 2 p.m. They'll be signing autographs, sharing cookies, and giving you a chance to win an autographed football and club seats for the Monday night game against the Chargers. More to come here on Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith on Jaguars Radio.
3rd and 11, the ball just shy of the 19-yard line. Painter to throw, looking left, turns and fires a pass, and this one is intercepted! Picked off by Drew Coleman, and he's down on the ground at the 20, and he slides and tries to get up, and they'll put him out of bounds at the 18-yard line.
One of the Jaguars' defensive plays from yesterday mentioned, 5 sacks, 2 interceptions, 2 forced fumbles. One of the plays we thought was an interception at first turned out to be the sack force fumble. Tyson Alualu caught it out of the air, and I was joking that Tyson probably would like to see the interception as a stat. A little more impressive for a defensive tackle. He could tell all his friends years from, oh, yeah, no, I was in coverage. Dropped in coverage. Now, he got the turnover, and the Jaguars were in good shape. Continue getting your unsung hero votes in. I nailed it again this week. I got it. So you can do that at Twitter. Tweet to me at Cole Pepper. Injury update now brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville's Circle of Care. Three players put on the injured reserve list today. Evan Britton with a back. Rasheen Mathis with his knee was an ACL. Kyle Bosworth, who has a broken hand. Britton's back, by the way, described by Jack Del Rio today as non-structural, meaning that whatever was done in terms of the surgery before fixed the structural issue, but this is something that has come since then. So the expectation is that he'll be healthy and ready to go next year, but rest is needed, so he'll be sitting out the rest of the way. And Mathis with a knee, obviously, Gina, that makes a difference when you lose a guy who's been here as long and really, despite some early criticism from fans, a lot of it unfounded, Rasheed's been playing very well here of late at cornerback, and that's a tough loss.
Very tough loss. A leader, someone that really had put together a good season. I know he didn't have interceptions, but he had plays on the ball, and he was a guy that was certainly playing to his strength when Mel, increased the amount of press man technique that we played this year. He's a guy that has matched up against some of the team's best receivers throughout the year and done a very good job. And it's very disappointing for him. In the game, Derek Cox went over left corner. Will Middleton went to right corner. Obviously, Drew Coleman's our nickel. And we functioned well in that personnel alignment, but losing a player of the caliber of him is a tough thing. And we got to get other guys to step up. And I know he'll be an extra coach, in essence, on the sideline, but that's a tough one there.
So Will Middleton, who has been asked a couple of times with when Derek Cox was injured, you moved him around a lot of different places. Can you use him in that same role? Do you use him as a starter? Is he more effective in the slot as a nickel or as a dime guy?
Well, I think Will showed playing right corner. He can certainly do that. He's a good tackler for one, which a lot of corners aren't. And he's a guy that's going to play the defense. He's not one of those guys that's going to play his own defense. Mm-hmm. So if he gets beat now, it's not going to be because he's not doing things the right way. And he's does a good job of keeping things in front of him. And then if the ball is caught, like I said, coming up making the tackle. And he's got some time on task now. He was our nickel a year ago. And, Derek had played some left corner, through OTAs and training camp going back a whole year. And obviously he's played primarily on the right side for us throughout his career. But, again, a tough loss. I mean, someone else has to step up. So the silver lining is it gives someone else an opportunity to compete and play. And I feel like defensively, it's a strength in numbers group. And, so we'll get some guys step up and do their part.
Interesting as well to see how things go the next couple of weeks. Colt McCoy and the Browns this week. And then next week, we'll talk about this later on in the show, Matt Schaub has an injured foot. Looks like Matt Leinart's going to be a quarterback for Houston against the Jaguars. So we'll see how it all plays out from that standpoint. Blaine Gabbert obviously continues to be in the spotlight. And we talked about being better in the second half than in the first. From what you saw, did the time he spent in the kind of getting some perspective, maybe getting away in the bye week, did you see any impact of that? Did you see anything from that against the Colts?
Well, I saw more in practice. Like I said, for our offense, the passing game in particular, it was without question the best week since the start of the regular season. Now, it may not have shown well the first half in particular, but I thought with some of the things that are going on right now, we got a couple guys with some soft tissue injuries that are out that will be coming back hopefully this week. I saw some very good signs, even in the game, that we're making improvement. And obviously, I'll take incremental improvement because anytime you're improving as a football team, it's a good thing. And I do think the arrow, without question, is up.
What happened on the 12 men on the field penalty?
Well, you got personnel packages where you're trying to get guys in and out. And Peyton has always been exceptional of, you know, changing the tempo of getting the ball snapped, mm-hmm. because, you know, if you're changing personnel, and obviously Painter did the same thing.
He learned a few things, huh?
Right. He tried to do it a couple times in the game, and sometimes for the fans, they don't see all the things that take place in between the commercials, mm-hmm. or obviously between plays like you can at a live game. So it's difficult sometimes getting off the field when a quarterback picks up the tempo, and we just got caught in one of those situations, and it was costly, obviously, because we had an interception on the play, but then we rebounded and came back, and Paul Pozuzny made a tremendous interception.
Boy, yeah, he very athletic. You don't see a lot of middle linebackers making athletic plays like Puz did on the interception. One other roster move to bring up, you signed off the Washington Redskins practice squad tight end Fendi, is it Anabun? What can you tell us about Fendi?
Well, he's a guy that was a basketball player at Arizona, was there for 4 years, ended up wanting to play football, so he played a year at University of Houston. It was a tight end, got drafted by St. Louis a year ago, was with them for the season. He ended up getting cut this preseason. He ended up, you know, ultimately on the Redskins practice squad when he got healthy, within the last week, and then we, in essence, signed him off of that practice squad because he's basically a free agent when you're on a practice squad. And so we feel like, you know, he's still got developmental upside, and he can give us something, hopefully, in the passing game because he is 6'6". He's 250 pounds. He runs mid to high 4.5, and he's a tremendous athlete that's still developing as a football player. So, you try to bring in a lump of clay for the coaching staff, in essence, to mold, to shape, and who they want the player to become. And certainly a big part of it is the player who has to have the desire to improve, to work at his craft. And I feel like, bringing in new players, again, sometimes just creates competition on your football team. It may not be just within the position group. It might be on special teams. And this year, we've had 58 different players perform in regular season games for us. And Lockley yesterday running down a kickoff was the 10th rookie to get in and play for us this year. So we've got some guys really competing hard on our scout team, earning opportunities to come up. And then, obviously, if we target a guy in somebody else's, we're going to try to add him to our team and try to upgrade our team even in season if possible.
All right, so keep an eye on him. Fendi Anabun, a good athlete, basketball player, and as Vic liked to used to call them, jars on the shelf, guys who can develop. All right, time now to name this week's Scout's Eye unsung player and unveil it. Gene, who is it this week?
Matt Roth. Matt's our starting left defensive end. Matt's a guy that is a very physical player at the point of attack, and he did have 6 total tackles. He had 2 tackles for loss. He forced a number of plays that he did not actually make, but he enabled other players to make because of his disruption at the point of attack. And then he was walking their tackle at times into the throwing lane of the quarterback. And he played with a lot of energy, and he did a lot of things that, you know, if you study the film, were very effective in allowing our front to play at a high level yesterday.
All right, Matt Roth, today's Scout Cy Unsung player. Got a couple of folks who nailed that one, too. So we will be contacting the winner. We'll take all the winners, put them in a hat, draw them out, and the winner will get an autographed football from both Matt Roth and the general manager, Gene Smith. We'll take time out. When we come back, we take a dip into the gene pools. We look at the DNA that it takes to make up a middle linebacker, plus more of your comments and questions from Facebook and from Twitter. If you want to tweet some questions to me at Cole Pepper, you can do so right now. Want to burn off pre-holiday calories and support a great cause? Then register today for McKenzie's Run, a 5K run and walk and a one-mile fun run that includes a Jumbotron finish on Everbank Field and a post-race celebration with Jackson DeVille, the Roar cheerleaders, live music and games. This fun family event will be held Saturday, November the 9th. 19th, rather, at 10 a.m. All proceeds go to the Mackenzie Noel Wilson Foundation to create programs that help young people recognize their full potential. Register online at mackenziesrun.org. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
Now there's the snap. A good time. Tanner now pumps and turns and throws. It's intercepted! This time, Puzlesny reached and got it.
Nice play.
There's that diving interception by Paul Puzlesny, part of the Jaguars' 5-sack, 2-interception, 2-force fumble day yesterday in the 17-3 victory over the Colts. Jaguars now 3-6 on the season. Colts 0-10 as the season marches on. You can win a VIP game day experience at the Jaguars-Texans game on November 27th from Gate. 4 game day tickets, 4 VIP Sky Patio lounge passes, and a limo for 4 to and from the game. Stop by your nearby Gate gas station to register. Jaguars fans, put Gate in your tailgate. Back here on Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, it's time now to jump into the gene pool and dissect a position. This week, our position is the middle linebacker spot. Average size by my deep, Gene's favorite part of the show when I reveal my deep and very exhaustive research on size. 6'1", 235, according to my sources. That looked a little small to me. 4'7", on the speed. Gene, what did you have?
Well, coming out of the combine a year ago, 6'0", 1'2", 241, 4'7", 6". And then starters in the league, 6'0", 1'1", 238, 4'7", 1".
So 238, the average size starter middle linebacker. That's surprising to me that that's not a little heavier.
Well, I think what's happened, there's a lot more what I would call expanded formations where people are forcing you to defend the whole field. So it's become more of a speed and space game. So you need a very athletic guy. It's not the old Didcut Butkus, who was a giant back when he played at 6'3", 245. You're seeing a lot more guys that are smaller but more athletic and, like I said, have the spatial ability to cover.
So what's the ideal size in the modern National Football League?
Well, let's just say Ray Lewis is 6 foot. He was 235 coming out. He's up to about 250 now, and he's went to 12 Pro Bowls. Patrick Willis is 6'1", 237. He ran a 4.38, and he's the middle linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, he's got rare speed. So
4.38?
4.38
when he came out. Wow, from a linebacker. Wow.
Yeah. And he could actually play, too. You know, some guys you say, you know, he's got this rare height, weight, speed, and it doesn't always transfer the field. With Patrick Willis, it does. So I would say, again, at least 6 foot, 230 pounds. And typically, if a guy runs under 4.6, he's going to be a playmaker, a guy that when he lines up in the middle of the field, he can run down and make plays for you. You can't really take him out of plays because he's going to line in the middle. So I would say that's ideal today.
Aside from quarterback, is this the position where you look for leadership abilities? I mean, is that one of the non-measurables?
Well, I think there's really 4 high football IQ positions where you really got to be able to communicate. You got to be able to identify certain things. We call it ID. Certain things. So the quarterback in the center on offense and the middle backer and the free safety on defense. So you want to be strong down the middle mentally for sure. And they do have to have, the middle backer in particular, good huddle command because he is your quarterback of the defense, good voice inflection. They got to be able to assert themselves out on the field and direct and to lead. And, You know, on the offensive side, it's a quarterback wearing the coach to player helmet device, and on defense, obviously, it's the mic linebacker, or some people call it the middle backer or the inside backer, but the mic does have that helmet device that he wears.
All right, so we start talking about some of the other non-measurables. Intelligence, leadership. A lot of times you'll hear people talk about instincts and toughness, two words that you hear a lot with middle linebackers. Which is more important?
Well, I think it's the instinct for the position. Some people call that key and diagnose. Some people call it read and react. I think that's the most important thing. There's some people that teach stacking and shedding blocks. There's other people that teach to, slip blocks. So it's really what you believe in. As a defensive coach, as to how you want your linebackers to play. I mean, I think we do a good job of stacking and shedding blocks at the point of attack. And there's times when you got to slip blocks, in essence. If you do backdoor one, you better make the play. So there's different chain of thought on, how linebackers should play in different schemes, the 4-3 in particular. Because, again, when you got undersized guys, they can't sit in there and try to take on blocks of 325-pound offensive linemen. I mean, those guys are looking to munch linebackers. So you got to have block avoidability. And I think, that's where the game's changed a little bit in terms of the style played by the linebackers.
All right, so we always finish up the Gene Pool segment with talking about who is best, whether it's the best right now, the best you ever scouted, best you ever saw, best in Jaguars history, what have you. Who's your best as far as the middle linebacker, the Mike linebacker?
Well, I'm going off highlights. When I think of a true middle backer, I'm going Dick Butkus. I mean, Pro Football Hall of Famer. He's got an award named after him. And certainly Mike Singletary was a little on the undersized end of it at 6 foot 230, and he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I would say today in the game it's Patrick Willis.
You take him over Ray Lewis
at this point?
Yeah,
I would. Ray Lewis is still a very good player, highly instinctive, strong at the point. He can't run, and he doesn't have the space ability that he once had, but still a tremendous football player. And, I got to mention, when you talk about players coming in all different shapes and sizes, Sam Mills was 5'9", 230 with the Carolina Panthers. He went to 5 Pro Bowls. It was unfortunate that he died at the age of 45 of intestinal cancer. But, it's a position that you certainly got to have instinct. You got to be able to play either off blocks or stack and shed, certainly at the point if you play that style. And then you got to be a tackler. You got to be the best tackler really on defense, a strong wrap tackler, because you should be the guy leading your team in tackles.
Which is exactly what the Jaguars have in Paul Pesleszny. All right, that's the Gene Pool here for this week as we examine the middle linebacker position. All right, Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars. If you want to join the conversation, you can also tweet questions to me. We have a number of Twitter questions we want to get to here in the final segment, so we'll take time out right here. Come back with more. Fans, just text BBQ to 72239 and enter for a chance to win the Sonny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You can hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
So it'll be third and goal from about the 3-yard line. Jaguars have an interception in the red zone today and a touchdown. Offset eye, tight end left, split receivers this time. Lewis starts left, goes right, lines up outside Guy Wimper. Here's the handoff to Maurice, and he's up the middle. Touchdown, Jacksonville! Maurice Jones-Drew finds the end zone for the fourth time this year. And caps off a huge performance by the 5'7" running back, and the Jaguars are up with a commanding 16-3 lead with 3:52 to play.
Maurice Drew was rolling. A little dice celebration afterwards. See what I did there? Yeah, clever. Touchdown for Maurice Jones-Drew. 25 carries, 114 yards in yesterday's 17-3 victory over the Colts. They become part of the Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program with Jaguars Advantage season ticket owners. can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to JaguarsAdvantage.com. Final segment here on Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. The general manager is in, and let's get some questions and comments here from folks on Facebook and on Twitter. Lance, question for you, Gene. With Collins and Mosley playing well, can Tyson Alualu play more defensive end more often?
Well, he can certainly play it because he did it in college. We feel like we've got some guys that can cross-train, you know, guys that can play inside and outside depending on the front we're going to employ versus the team and what they like to do. And I think the other thing you try to do is if you can gain an advantage in matchups, we'll certainly try to do that. But, yes, he can.
All right, some more questions coming in, this time from Facebook.
Yeah, out of Facebook. By the way, these Facebook and Twitter questions brought to you by our friends at CopyFax. Gene, Colin wants to know, is there any chance that with the guys on the IR, we could call up DeJuan Harris from the practice squad?
Well, he's certainly a guy that has made progress throughout the year. He's done a tremendous job of working hard in practice to stress our defense. I think guys like him are a big part of why our defense performs so well on Sunday. So I think, yeah, he's a guy that has improved. I'd like to think he has a future in this league. And, you know, he's one of a number of guys. So I think that's a good name to consider.
And we saw plenty of him showcasing himself in the preseason especially. Eric, with this tweet, will we see more of Chasten West at wide receiver in the coming games? West had three catches for 39 yards in the game yesterday.
I think so. I mean, obviously, whoever's catching the ball will become a closer friend of the quarterback. And I feel like, you know, last week he made some tremendous catches in practice, and that's why I think it started to transfer to game day, because usually if you do it in practice, at some point it's going to start showing up in live games. And, you know, I feel like once we get a couple other guys back out there, Cecil Shorts and Brian Robisky and Jason Hill isn't completely healthy, and we got some guys playing with some nicks, and Mike Thomas gets back into the fold more. Certainly with Chasten, we got a very competitive group that I think will start making some plays on a more consistent basis the second half of the season than we did in the first half.
All right, before I forget, I want to give a shout-out to some Jaguars fans. I know there were a number of fans who went up there to Indianapolis for the game, but Tyrone, who actually called us, I think, after the game yesterday, but got this email today. I don't know if you've seen this, Gene, but Tyrone and his girlfriend Marilyn went up to Indianapolis for the game, drove up, watched the game, cheered on the Jaguars, and then got in the car, came back home, called the post-game show on the way back, you know, drove up, drove back, basically a 28-hour excursion for the game. And on top of it all, Marilyn had a surgery scheduled at JOI today, so they had to get back in time for that. And Tyrone emailed us from the waiting room at JOI as she was having her surgery. We trust all went well, but those are some hardcore Jaguars fans.
No question. I really appreciate them making the trip. I'm glad we were able to send them home on a little shorter ride with that victory, and truly appreciate their support.
And no report whether Marilyn will be on the IR for the rest of the season or whether she'll be back out there for the next home game or another road trip, but we trust that the healing will go well. A couple of things. Looking at the AFC South as it stands right now, Houston 7-3 after beating Tampa Bay 37-9, and this morning, you know, thinking about the division and how it's shaped up, boy, Houston's starting to really look good, put up some big numbers. Although Tampa's been a schizophrenic team this year, 37-9 is a pretty dominating performance. And then the word comes in that Matt Schaub has an injured foot. I think it's a Lisfranc situation. So one report right now is that he'll be done for the year. There are others that are, you know, saying at least a couple of weeks, maybe more, but doesn't look like the Jaguars will see Matt Schaub when they play him in a couple of weeks, and he may be gone for the year, so Matt Leinart will be in. And the Titans, who beat Carolina 30-3, now 5-4, this division was taking a pounding from folks saying, well, this is a pretty soft division. But if the Jaguars can string some wins together now, all of a sudden this looks like it could be a pretty competitive division here over the last month and a half of the season.
No question, Cole. We just need to take it one game at a time and continue to improve. And my hope is when we get into the holiday season and people sit down for dinner on Christmas or talking Jaguars and what our, playoff considerations are. I mean, that's a goal every single year in the future. But obviously the football players on this team and the coaching staff and people like myself, it's all about the Cleveland Browns. And I think if we do that, we focus on the next game, everything else will take care of itself.
And we'll talk about the Browns here in just a second. I do want to point this out. If folks saying, well, geez, the Jaguars would have to go 7-1 or something in the second half in order to make the playoffs. And 7-1 would probably be putting you in a pretty good position. 49ers went 7-1 to start the year. How many people thought the 49ers were going to be 8-1 now after their win yesterday? I mean, you're talking about a team that has more or less come out of nowhere and done what they've done this year.
Cole, you're exactly right. And there's a team that will do something like that. And that team, it will be considered one of the hot teams that gets into the playoffs. And you never know for sure who it's going to be. You just got to take care of your own business. And I feel like there's some good things going on right now on our football team. And it was great to validate some of it yesterday in Indianapolis.
All right, let's look ahead to Cleveland. On the road at the new Dog Pound to take on the Browns. What are some of the key matchups you'll be looking for? What should folks be watching on Sunday if they want to zero in on one of those key matchups?
Well, I'll call it the law firm of Reuben, Taylor, and Jackson. When you talk about the two defensive tackles, and DeQuell Jackson, their middle linebacker, very active three in the middle, against our law firm of Rackley, Meester, and Nwori. So I feel like if you really want to look at a brand of football that's in the trenches, very combative, you know, the guys that align closest to the football typically have the greatest impact on the game. You'll get a chance to see a real test for us this Sunday up in Cleveland.
Isn't it just perfect that in November in Cleveland, you start watching the guards and the center and the defensive tackles, the middle line? I mean, you watch a few games in that state through the years in November and December where the big uglies, they were the stars even if nobody knew it.
No question, Cole. And for me, it's certainly going back home. And, you know, I feel like our team's ready to do some great things. And I'm glad we started off the second half in such a positive way. You know, when I look at our schedule, too, the first half, we ended up, I think, with the strongest schedule in the NFL through 10 games. So it should bode well for us as a football team down the stretch.
Yeah, all right. Some opportunities there if the Jaguars can take care of business. And now at 3-6, Cleveland, and then back home to take on the Houston Texans. We'll talk about that game next week. And the Texans, again, looks like it's going to be without their quarterback, Matt Schaub. So things getting interesting here in the month of November as Thanksgiving approaches. Tomorrow night, Jack Del Rio show at 6. Brian Sexton will be here with the head coach. And then on Wednesday, Jaguars This Week. Brian's back with Jeff Loggeman and John Osher for Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Gene, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Cole. Thank you, Joe. And thanks to all the fans out there.
For the general manager, Gene Smith, and for producer Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening, and good night from Jaguar Central.